phone program, second hour of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. I'm Chuck Rattert. Let's come on in with a question. Or a comment, whichever suits your fancy. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're joined on the telephone by Pastor Lane Bergman, pastor at Faith Lutheran Church in Churubusco, Indiana, where I'm quite sure that it's just as pretty today as it is here in St. Louis. How are you, sir?
Well, good morning to you. I am well, and a good morning to our listeners. Pray God's blessings for each and all today.
How's the motorcycle riding weather out there?
It is outstanding. One might say picture perfect. It was delightful today, although you did want to wear a jacket.
You ever have bugs in your teeth, Pastor?
Once in a great while. I think I've had bugs everywhere, teeth included.
That probably doesn't make for a good pulpit presentation if you smile and got bugs in your teeth.
People point and laugh. It's true. And some people look a little green, you know, but it's free protein. Who's to complain?
Pastor, with your permission, I would like to follow up on our conversation we had in the 10 o'clock hour. We were considering Hebrews chapter 12. We went through the first 13 verses. Pastor Tim Ostermeyer was our guest. And we could have gone 2 hours on the subject, and then I thought, well, while we do that, we'll just we'll just bring Pastor Lane Bergland into the conversation here and get maybe your thoughts. What we were talking about is the discipline of the Lord. We're in that 12th chapter of Hebrews, it says that, let's see here, I'm going to count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, at least 8 times where the word discipline is mentioned. And the question, the rhetorical question, you know, what father does not discipline his son? We are in an age where the conventional wisdom, the sociological wisdom, seems to be never, ever use corporal punishment on your children. Never spank your children. And the Bible seems to be running in at least a different direction there. I don't know if it's the opposite direction. You spank your kids, Pastor?
You know, I had 4, and with 2 I did and 2 I didn't. I thought it was kind of an interesting experiment to see if it had any long-term impact, and I can't say offhand that I see a lot of difference. But then again, you know, they're individual people. And I will say one of the things that I heard that Dr. Dobson offer was really good advice, is if you do choose corporal punishment to spank your kids, never do it when you're angry. I thought that was outstanding advice, because sometimes you might administer more discipline than what's appropriate or than you intend.
I think it's good advice, but I'm not sure that it's practical. You know, who's not angry when it comes time maybe to spank your kids?
Usually you've got some emotional investment there. And I thought the other thing, too, played a role was the personality of the children. Our third daughter, for example, wouldn't respond at all to spanking. She would take the spanking, give you a dirty look, and proceed. So it was in her case, timeouts worked really well, where she wasn't allowed to go out and run around and play outside. You know, a 5-minute timeout or a 10-minute timeout was more effective than any corporal punishment I could devise. So I think it depends to some extent on the kid. I think certainly to the circumstance you want to think through, and if you decide to do it, remember the difference in physical size, strength, and all that good stuff. But I agree with you. I think the whole concept of not disciplining your kids at all, especially no corporal punishment, stems from an idea that all children are good and human beings are basically good, and the Bible would have something to say to that issue.
I don't know that I can remember being spanked by my dad. My dad was a shift worker, so he wasn't always around to see some of the mischief that I got into. But I was spanked by my mother on occasion when I was little. I remember that. As I pointed out in the previous hour, her utensils of choice were either the wooden spoon or the spatula. She never beat me, Pastor. She grabbed me by the arm and turned me around and paddled me on my behind. I was never afraid that I was going to be beaten. But it seems that these days we can't have a middle ground. We can't find a middle ground between, you know, using some loving words of correction and beating some kid to a pulp. Isn't it possible to strike a productive chastening, even Bible-inspired middle ground?
Yes, I think, though, that it is difficult given the media. That is to say, it's fairly easy, I think, to have a consensus in the fact that people that produce TV shows and movies have a strong value system of their own, and they will project that value system into the product that they turn out, to it, the TV shows that we watch and the movies that we watch. And most of those will come out of a value system which plays the human nature much more positively than what I think the real world teaches. And I think it's fair to say, too, most of the folks that produce TV shows and movies are against any sort of corporal punishment. Therefore, you don't see common sense. You don't see restrained corporal punishment used. What you see is the two extremes, the loving parent that never disciplines the child and the child that is wise beyond its years, contrasted with the barbaric Christian that beats his kids because the proverb says, spare the rod and spoil the child. So you have kind of a socio-political agenda that's being fostered in the media, and as a result, you never hear or see much in between. And I don't know that there's any way to avoid it. All of us, whatever we do, we project our own values and our beliefs and so forth. But it's just not real. You know, in the real world where you have people, human beings, being raised without discipline, you're going to get a very unruly crop of adult human beings. And that's what you're getting. I think it's the product, what we're seeing raised these days is the product of an overly permissive approach to child rearing.
Well, looking back on it, I don't doubt that as a youngster that I felt the sting of the wooden spoon. I'm quite certain that was unpleasant. But I think probably the thing that was more painful was the humiliation that came from taking my self-inflated ego and having it knocked down a couple of notches, not so much by the pain of the sting of the wooden spoon, but the pain of the reassertion of my mother's authority and putting me in my place. I suspect that those who believe that we should never spank children are more motivated by the pain or the memory of that humiliation than they are worrying that some parent might lose his mind and beat his child to a pulp. What do you think?
Well, it's true that we all of us carry our own baggage. Our childhood comes with us no matter where we go. And that if we have, a memory of having been embarrassed or felt badly about being disciplined, or maybe sometimes we felt we were disciplined unjustly or that was too harsh, then we're likely to try to correct that in the rearing of our own children. And, of course, the idea is that instead of then being wrong on one side of the equation, we end up being wrong on the other side of the equation with equally bad results, although different. But, you know, the problem of an imbalanced approach to child rearing results in either someone who's really carrying a lot of baggage from too much or someone who's never learned the value of self-restraint. You know, the benefit of this kind of training that you see pictured as the Lord deals with us and as hopefully we as good parents would to our children is that the child learns those things that are harmful to avoid them. The model that I have in my mind is that as a child, maybe I reach up and I touch the hot burner on the stove. The pain instructs me not to do this again so that instead of putting my hand on and letting it cook to a crisp and thus losing my hand, the pain has taught me not to do it and thus produces the benefit of avoiding those things that are harmful. And I think an ideal situation, that's exactly what punishment, corporal or some other form, is designed to do, is teach the child behavior that will produce negative results down the line. And I really think it's obviously critically important that as adults who have had the experience of bad behavior, we know what unrestrained self-indulgence leads to. We see the results of that all the time. It's important to help the child discipline himself and thus to have, you know, as Dr. Dobson says, one of the better lines of advice across the board, make sure the child understands what is expected, and then also when you set the limits, enforce the limits. If you say, well, this is the penalty for doing this, and the child does this, then enforce the penalty, and that creates respect and also helps the child learn self-discipline. What I see, and it's kind of a character, I guess, in some ways, but it's true, too, is a lot of people, well, I'm going to count to three, or I told you once before, and I don't do that again, and it's all verbal, and what the child quickly learns is you can do anything you want to. The worst that's going to happen is somebody going to jack their jaw at you, they're going to prattle on, maybe point their finger, and, you know, boy, we can all survive that. But, yeah, there's a certain amount of ego involved, but also, hopefully, long-term, there's the learning of benefits that produce good fruit in our life instead of negative behaviors. You know, I think anybody who's not been to a juvenile correction facility might well be benefited by visiting. I visit members locally in the Fort Wayne area. It's known as the Wood Youth Facility. When you visit a child, a teenager, who's in there for an extended period of time because of behavior that crosses the criminal boundaries, you begin to learn the value of corporal punishment, the value of some kind of disciplinary system.
So is discipline supposed to be painful?
I'm sorry?
Is discipline supposed to be painful?
It's supposed to be instructive.
It's supposed to... Oh, I know that. I already knew that.
And
is it supposed
usually
to be painful?
You know, of one sort or another, whether emotionally or physically, yeah, I think that's why there's pain systems. That is to say, you know, we ask sometimes when we hurt. Yesterday was a tough day for arthritis, which I've got in my hands and knees and feet. And, you know, it was one of those days where I really knew I needed to ride the Harley because it's got heated grips and that helped. So I had to go out and administer therapy to me. And we think, well, why should there be so much pain? But if there wasn't pain, we would never learn to avoid those things that would kill us otherwise. And like this, too, of some sort of pain, whether emotional, physical, whatever, yeah, discipline probably needs to be painful because that's how we learn. That's what instructs us. We're just not, you know, I can sit and tell people things that they can do to improve their life. I can offer great advice. I don't even charge for it, right? How much of that is listened to and how much of that is put into practice? Ah, golly, I bet you could figure that percentage out.
So if in the United States we should somehow come to consensus where all of the parents refrain from corporal punishment or swatting their children on the behind, no spanking going on in America anywhere, to the great delight of many sociologists and theologians for that matter, would that be God-pleasing?
I doubt that it would turn out well, simply because human nature is sinful and corrupt, and most people given license to indulge themselves will end up in bad places, places that are harmful to themselves and others. So I would say overall, my guess is probably not so much.
So does the Bible speak to corporal punishment, or is the Bible silent on corporal punishment?
I think you can argue that the Bible speaks to corporal punishment positively, but it's always in the context of concern for the child and love for the child. I think of the Proverbs line, spare the rod and spoil the child. You know, the idea being that if you refrain from corporal punishment, the child won't learn to avoid those things that are harmful in a much bigger way. You know, so you got swatted on the rear end, that stings. Yeah, well, had you indulged in this behavior, let's say playing in the street. I can remember one instance when, and of course when we served a parish in Kansas, lived in a country, we were just a few feet off of a paved road where the speed limit was 55 miles an hour, and it was on a curve, a hill. And the older two children had seen one of our dogs hit out there, and it was a gruesome sight, but it taught them by visual witness not to play on the street. The two younger ones never saw that, and one day, while conducting business, I looked out, where are my two youngest ones? They were playing with the gravel that had spilled out of the driveway onto the asphalt mere yards from the crest of the hill. Somebody coming from the other direction would never have had time to slow down before he killed both of them. So with some strong encouragement, I brought them both in from the street and spanked both to teach them that that's a bad place to play. It looks like a good place to play. It's flat. It's warm in the summertime. It would be the ideal spot to play, except for the fact it's a 55-mile-an-hour zone blind hill, and you're going to die there. So, in, yes, that discipline is good for the child. It keeps them alive, and that's the approach I think you see in Scripture pretty common, that this whole concept of discipline has a positive benefit, even though it hurts and it's embarrassing, and it teaches, though, and that's the strong suit.
All right, here's a discipline situation. I'm turning a corner here. This is a story that comes from London, from the Associated Press, yesterday. And I'm interested in your reaction, because you used to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Did you teach in a setting other than the seminary?
Yes, I taught in high school.
You were
I
a
taught
high school teacher.
In Chicago.
That's what I thought. Okay, well, this is a good question for you then. Here's what the story says. A British high school student received credit for writing nothing but a two-word obscenity on an exam paper because the phrase expressed meaning was spelled correctly. The Times newspaper on Monday quoted examiner Peter Buckroyd as saying he gave the student, who wrote an expletive starting with F followed by the word off, 2 points out of a possible 27 for the English paper. Quote, "It would be wicked to give it zero because it does show some very basic skills we are looking for, like conveying some meaning and some spelling," unquote. "It's better than someone that doesn't write anything at all." Buckroyd said the student would have received a higher mark if the phrase had been punctuated. Buckroyd is a senior examiner for the Assessment and Qualifications Alliance, one of several bodies that grade British high school exams. He said the expletive was used in 2006 by a student in response to the question, "Describe the room you are sitting in." The Alliance confirmed the newspaper's story was accurate, but said Buckroyd's decision to award the student marks was not official policy. Here's a quote. "The example cited was unique in the experience of the senior examiner concerned and was used in a pre-training session to emphasize the importance of adhering to the mark scheme. That is, if a candidate makes any sort of response to a question, then it must be at least given consideration to be awarded a mark," according to the company. It said obscenities on exam papers, quote, "should either be disregarded or action will be taken against the candidate depending on the seriousness of the case." So if you're giving an exam, Mr. High School Teacher, and the student writes F off on the paper, what are you going to do?
I will eject him from the classroom. That is unacceptable
behavior.
Wow,
that's pretty harsh discipline.
Yeah, immediately, and you are out of here.
Are you going to spank him?
No, I have a firm policy of not doing that to any but my own kids,
okay.
You know. I would recommend then a 3-day expulsion from the high school at that point, but he is out of the classroom. There is, I think, behind political correctness, a complete failure to connect to the real world or to deal with common sense. And if I understand, you know, at least the rumor is Great Britain is the home to political correctness, and we've imported across the pond, as it were, and this is the kind of result you can sort of see developing in a lot of cases. There's a failure to appreciate that this child will go through life without showing respect to anybody in authority, and is going to really struggle, probably end up having to make some later in life decisions about things like crime, or, gee, how well do you like the inside of a jail? And you could help the kid an awful lot by teaching him that that is not appropriate. He needs to learn to control himself, even if he feels that way. Suck it up and be a human being.
Well, every time we cross one of these intersections, I just scratch my head because it's not really acceptable to question this kind of enlightened thinking. But here I sit, lost in space. The quote from the examiner, Peter Buckroyd, is, "It would be wicked to give it zero because it does show some very basic skills we are looking for, like conveying some meaning and some spelling." And every cell in my body says, no, it's wicked to write obscenities or vulgarities on your classwork. That's wicked,
Yeah, I would say he's got a different dictionary that he's working with.
So is this man insane, or do you have another explanation?
I believe it reflects the problem that you've got in Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve opt to define good and evil on their own rather than going with God's dictionary. They're going to create their own rather than letting God tell them how to do this stuff. They're going to make their own decisions. And it's that sort of independent rebelliousness which we've come somehow in the last generation or two, or maybe two and a half, to prize. And there's some value, of course, in it, but when you let it rule unrestrained in a society, you get a bunch of people that aren't really capable of doing anything except being conquered by a more vital society, which is, I might guess, what's going to eventually happen anyway. I can't imagine, you know, the rest of the world just watching us decay as we're doing and not helping themselves to us.
So Pastor Berglund, not Pastor Berglund, Daddy Berglund, is at home when he gets word from the school that one of your four children has submitted a paper, classwork, with these words written on it. What happens when the kid gets home?
Spanking and sent to bed and grounded. You know, that would be an egregious breach.
Egregious?
Yes, that is to say.
That's a big word. What does that mean?
That means you went way over the line. It wasn't close. There wasn't just a toe over, a foot over. That means you bailed over the line and stayed there.
You're going to be angry?
I would be upset. We would try to control that during the disciplinary process, but at the same time, the child would need to learn this is not acceptable.
And does what happens when Daddy Berglund, in the process of administering this important life-shaping discipline, hears the words, "Well, Dad, I actually got credit. They actually gave me points because, well, after all, I was demonstrating some skills they were looking for and conveying some meaning and some spelling," which I know the kid wouldn't say it quite that way, but they might say, "Why are you punishing me? They gave me credit." How do you respond?
At that point, we'd either look for a new school or would talk to the superintendent of the school where that teacher's at and encourage them.
What are you going to say to that superintendent?
That their teacher would be better off teaching valuable life skills rather than just trying to pass on his version of political correctness, that this is not doing the kid any good. And really, you know, at some point you have to sort of sort through who's in charge of your kid. Is it the state or is it the parent? And there's a doctrine of education called in loco parentis, in the place of the parent. That is, the teacher is there for the period of time the child is in school, but ultimately recognizes the parent as the authority. Now, in a representative society, let's suggest for the moment that we live in a democratic society where the school is supposed to reflect and do the will of the parents of the children rather than vice versa.
What kind of a fantasy are you in there?
Yeah, isn't that wild? Like liberty and freedom and would be somehow mentioned along with terms like security and safety. But, the parent is supposed to do the will of the state's supposed to do the will of the population, the democratic people that vote for it, as well as the school's supposed to do the will of the parents.
Boy, we've got a lot of work to do.
Oh, yeah, we've kind of got it backwards,
right,
don't we?
Hold that thought right there. The teacher is supposed to do the work of the parent. Oh, my goodness. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Bible Study. Ask the Pastor.
Hi, I'm Tom Baker, inviting you to tune in to Law and Gospel. Have you ever heard a wonderful interpretation of a biblical passage, but did not know how to apply it to your own life? That's the task of properly distinguishing between law and gospel. It's what you hear on the weekday broadcast regularly.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
You'll find several icons for our short-form programs on the right side of our worldwide KFUO website. These are those short programs no more than a couple of minutes long that you hear throughout the day on AM 850 KFUO. You'll find these programs informative and uplifting. Short programs like the Meyer Minute, Front Porch Parenting, Do You Have a Minute, and By the Way. If you miss them on the radio or just want to hear them again, click onto KFUO.org and listen today.
Another amazing example of God's provision for His creatures. Details coming up on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Insects offer some novel designs. For example, they can have ears on their stomachs, wings or legs. Now scientists at the University of Zurich in Switzerland have discovered an even more novel arrangement in the fruit fly. Scientists have been aware for many years that fruit flies can respond to sound. Sound plays an important part in their mating rituals. However, scientists were unsure just how the fruit fly's hearing worked. They also knew that their antennae, known singularly as arista, have something to do with the way the fruit fly can hear sound. Because an arista is so small, only 300 microns long, scientists have until recently lacked the ability to take the fine measurements necessary to find out what is really going on. Now all that has been overcome, and we learn that the base of the arista, which also senses smells, actually turns each arista towards the incoming sound. In short, the fruit fly actually rotates its nose so that it can hear better. Researchers have since found a similar arrangement in related flies. They suspect that such an arrangement will be found in several related species. As amazing as this arrangement is, God's greatest wisdom is seen in his plan of salvation. Through his Son, Jesus Christ, he has gained the victory of sin and death and Satan for mankind.
For more information, visit us online at creationmoments.com. You'll find both written and audio transcripts, creation-focused articles and Bible studies, and many other resources, all at creationmoments.com.
AM 850 KFUO depends on the generosity of our listeners. And because of you and others like you, we've not been disappointed. But AM 850 KFUO is not about us. It's about you. And that's why we'd like to hear from you during this month of July and celebrate with you during your day as a day sponsor. AM 850 KFUO is about Jesus and the good news of the gospel. Would you celebrate that message with us by becoming a day sponsor in July? Call 1-888-4KFUO-AM today.
You've still got time to sign up for summer camps at the Kennedy Recreation Complex, 6050 Wells Road in St. Louis. Kennedy Recreation Complex offers traditional day camps for ages 4 through 12 and specialty camps. Swimming lessons will be provided by the American Red Cross for ages 6 months and over. You can register in person, by phone from 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. or online at www.stlouisco.com/parks.
Welcome back to our Bible study, second hour, Ask the Pastor Hour. Pastor Lane Berglund is with us. He is pastor of Faith Lutheran Church in Churubusco, Indiana. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We interrupted him in mid-thought. I'm going to just ask you to hold on to that thought here for another few moments here, Pastor, while we take a phone call and bring Jeff on board.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing fine.
What's happened today in America is that the government's replaced God, or is trying to. You know, our rights come from God, and the government is to support and make sure that we have those rights that come from God. Now the state wants to give you your rights, and obviously if the state gives them, then they can take them away.
Yeah, I'm afraid that you're right. Pastor Berglund?
Yes, I think it's unavoidable. Yeah, that any government, even that which is conceived by the people, formed by the people for the benefit of the people, any government will have a tendency to take over hegemony. That is to say, every organization eventually seeks to dominate and control. And that's true of government as well. That's one of the things I appreciate so much about our Constitution and the amendments to the Constitution. I think it's a very interesting read to take a look at them as written by our founders.
Did you say hegemony?
Yeah, the tendency to...
Boy, it's a big word there in the Bible study today.
You know, I took all that time and money to learn those words,
yeah.
And by George, I'm going to use them once in a while.
Well, tell us what that means.
Well, you know, to have control over the landscape, in a sense, that is to say, to run things for your own benefit rather than somebody else's benefit.
Mm.
And... to read the Constitution and the amendments as a protection intended to keep us safe from our own government. That is, you know, the government will try to dictate behavior. And as a motorcyclist, say, for example, I'm interested in how state governments and how the federal government, which is always involved in such things, decides whether or not to require helmets. And as one who always wears a helmet, very seldom do I ride without a helmet, I have a kind of a variety of helmets so that I'm reasonably comfortable no matter what the weather. I yet don't believe the government should have the right to dictate the right to wear a helmet. That seems to me to cross a line. My father would have that right, but the government's not my father. You know, the government can restrain me from doing harm to others, but I should have under the government certain autonomy and choice. Now, my father's a little different. You know, he would have the right to tell me to wear a helmet, and I would have the obligation to do so. But like I say, the government is not my father, and it's an important line to keep drawn, I think, between a government that is for the people and a government that serves itself primarily. And there's just this awful tendency, and it's a very natural one, I suspect, that governments and other organizations, any institution, I think it's even a sociological principle, will tend to, within a period of time, serve itself. One of the things I appreciate so much about living in our country is that we still have this kind of freedom, and I hope to keep as much as we can for as long as we can.
Well, we only have about, I don't know, 20 minutes or so left here, and we have a great deal of remedial work to do here, because you seem to be operating under the delusion that when your children are there in the public school, the agent of the state, the public school teacher, is supposed to be somehow affecting your will in your absence. Is that kind of what you said?
Yes, oddly enough. Well said, too.
Boy.
I couldn't have said it better. Yeah, it's what I operate with in my confirmation class. I try to practice what I preach. In my confirmation class, I tell the parents that they are, in fact, the ones responsible for their child's spiritual development and religious education. I am here to help them as they can. If they have conflicts with other things like sports, then it's totally their decision whether to take the child to sports or not. But go over this part of the catechism, go over these stories in the Bible, and spend time with your child then on your own, and bring that child to class as you can within your framework. Because one of the challenges anymore today is for those who have kids is the schedules, you know, trying to keep people involved in 7 days a week worth of stuff, 52 weeks a year. So I take the tact that the parents are responsible for the children, and I, as their pastor, am here to facilitate, help, and serve. And I thought maybe the government should have that same approach.
No.
Apparently not. The government may not sign on to that right now.
You don't. We've got to bring you back. You are way out there. Now, those of us in the States, we're deeply concerned about your children. We're not even sure whether or not you should be allowed to retain your children. Because there is a report, Pastor, that in the privacy of your own home and parenting, that you're actually teaching the children that in your house that evolution is not true and that creation is true.
Yeah, who would have guessed? The whole Bible thing.
You have daughters. You have daughters, do you not?
Three daughters and a son.
Three daughters. Why, this is a very serious situation, because you're probably telling them that they should never opt for the abortion option, which is legal, by the way, in our country.
Sadly so.
It's probably true that you're bordering on child abuse in filling their heads with these crazy notions. I'm not so sure that we in the state should allow you to keep your kids.
Someday it may even come to that, too. You know, I think of recent events down in Texas where apparently the great horrible things going on weren't really going on, that someone from outside ratted them out with a fake phone call. And of course, the first thing the state's going to do is break up families and take control of the kids, which is kind of an interesting approach, I thought. But yeah, there's a movement over the last couple of generations where the state has become the parent, and people look to the state to take care of all their needs rather than looking to government to simply provide a basic framework in which people can move and live with some freedom from crime and oppression. You know, that is to say, it's a real different picture of government as someone who would come in and take care of all my needs if I just give it permission to do so and take over my life. That whole, you know, business of being able to choose for ourselves is something that is worth retaining. And I know as Christians, we're likely to face a more increasingly hostile environment as these politically correct opinions become enforced. Like in my case with three daughters and a pastor, I figured out way long ago, if one of the girls got pregnant and wasn't married, we need to put, again, our faith to practice here and say, well, you made a mistake. Well, we're going to raise the kid. This is kind of an obligation to the life God has given you. And no, abortion's not an option. Or in the case of, you know, creation and evolution, the Bible speaks straightforward on it, and it's an issue I wrestled with personally for a long time. What finally persuaded me is the text of Scripture, especially as I had access to it in the original. It really does say, God created the world in 7 days, and, oh, by the way, the rest of Scripture affirms it, praising God as the creator of all in the Old Testament, and going to Genesis 1, 2, and 3 frequently in the New Testament for all kinds of things, like who are we as married people in Matthew 19, Mark 10, who are we as a church and structure and leadership, 1 Timothy 2, 1 Corinthians 14. So they take it seriously, and then it's just a matter, once I figured out that's what it's really saying, is then that's what it really says, and I believe it. So, yeah, I think as Christians we'll face more and more opposition as this direction, which I think it's fair to say we've seen our Western culture take in the last couple of generations as it continues in a trajectory very different from that which we have in the Word of God.
Let me take a little bit different approach here and just hypothesize a little bit. For those people who have joined us and didn't hear the story that I shared in the first half hour, this is from the Associated Press, a story in London. And to summarize, a student who was taking an exam wrote two words on the exam in the context of one of the questions on the exam, obscenities, the first word beginning with F and the second word being the word off. And after the student wrote this, the student actually received credit for this answer. And the examiner, as they're called over there in England, said that his comment was, it would be wicked to give it a zero, meaning the answer, because it does show some very basic skills we're looking for, like conveying some meaning and some spelling. Now, we all look at that and say, well, that's just crazy. That is just absolutely crazy, and I don't know how you come to that conclusion. Some teachers might say, you know what? I've been teaching for a while, and I've punished this kind of behavior. I've punished this kind of response before. I've written a big fat zero on there. What was it that you said you would have done? You would
have ejected them from the classroom.
Ejected the class? Oh, my goodness. You know, I've done that. And you know what happens? The next day I got to be in a meeting with parents who want to know who I think I am punishing this kind of behavior or marking down the paper for this kind of behavior, and the school won't back me up. And the next thing you know, I'm taking all the heat for it. It makes a certain amount of sense to just go with the flow. Pastor,
it's easier, and that's really disappointing if the school administration doesn't back you up on that. That's another area where we see, you know, sort of a breakdown. Responsibility to those who serve you to stand behind them when they're right, rather than simply caving in. But I know, you know, I've been around long enough and I've watched this long enough that that's likely to be the case, whether you're in education or you're in retail. You know, dishonesty and disrespect are rampant, and they're rewarded, or so it seems. Yet still, right is right and wrong is wrong, and it's worth doing the best you can to make that point. Lovingly, yes, but firmly, with concern for the other people, because ultimately, you know, the person that disciplines the child is the one demonstrating real concern. And I used to tell my kids, look, I don't ground anybody else, I don't take time out on anybody else, I don't spank anybody else, it's just you four guys, because you are my responsibility, and I care deeply for you. Otherwise, I wouldn't go through all this hassle. I can remember my eldest daughter, when she was in high school, a freshman, I believe, stayed out past curfew and left the building where she was supposed to be at a dance, so I grounded her for a fairly long period of time in her eyes. And it would have been a lot easier over the next 6 months to just have ignored the problem, but it wasn't what was right for her. You know, and I'm sure that she would still remember to this day. It was a long time grounded. But on the other hand, it was a serious infraction, and for her own benefit, I was willing to have somebody stay mad at me for the next 6 months and refuse to speak with me, except curtly, and to put up with all the grief that goes with a very upset person in your life, because I care that much for them.
One more question on this. I'm trying to imagine Pastor Lane Berglund, or Parent Lane Berglund, sitting in the principal's office or maybe the superintendent's office, trying to make the case that the way the teacher or the examiner, in this case there in London, handled this was inverted, was backwards, handled it as poorly perhaps as possible. I think most folks who have made a trip to the principal's office to make a case like that know what it's like to maybe get some lip service, maybe get a few head nods, no commitments to anything. Pastor Bergman, we'll work on this, and you know nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the only thing that can, the only result that really could in the current situation, the current climate, I think. But, you know, it still doesn't, again, doesn't relieve us of the responsibility to try. And even if we are dusted and blown off, and I'm sure we would be, we would at least tried and made the point. And I don't want to, the job myself of a superintendent, or I know people serve locally on the school board. Boy, I sure have no interest in that, because it is a great deal of grief and frustration. On the one hand, you have the court systems with all the decisions they've handed down, and that's changed the face of education by what the courts have said you can and can't do. And the school districts and the administrators, they've got to abide by that, or they're going to get sued and then fired and maybe face criminal charges. So, you know, they've got to toe the line that's been handed them by the courts. But at the same time, you know, even if we're a shrinking minority, and I suspect we are, at least our voice can be heard. At least we can say, this is not what God intended. It's not going to turn out well for anybody, the child, or the society in which this is permitted. It's only going to lead to eventually decay and being taken over by somebody else.
All right, one more. you get all the crazy stuff today. I'm sorry. I apologize. This is a story out of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the main newspaper here in St. Louis, written by Nicholas J.C. Pister. And the headline is Local and National Outbreak of Grave Robbing. Grave robbing has become an above-ground affair. Gone are the days when enterprising thieves would dig up an old grave and pillage for gold teeth and rings. Today, it's mostly the bronze markers and flower vases that draw their attention. Rising scrap metal prices, coupled with the lagging economy, have triggered a string of cemetery thefts, both locally and across the nation. I can't think of anything lower, said David Evans, general manager for Valhalla Gardens of Memory in Belleville. Nothing's worse than stealing from the dead. But grave robbers beware, the authorities are getting wise. States are passing laws and police are cracking down. In March, the Madison County Sheriff's Department arrested three people for stealing 40 vases from two Metro East cemeteries. The owner of a Granite City scrap recycling center turned them in. Last year, a trio of thieves hit the Valhalla Memorial Park Cemetery in East Alton. They stole 17 bronze vases from graves in the cemetery. A month later, they went back and stole a dozen more. The two men and a woman were arrested after a tipster reported a suspicious vehicle. Charges are pending. Scrap value of bronze vases is about $10. According to cemetery operators, the replacement price often tops $300. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think that's pervasive.
Is that a seventh commandment issue, Pastor Berger?
Amongst others, yeah. It is a real common sort of thing, people stealing stuff. Another symptom, if you will, of a lack of respect for anybody else. And again, if you just turn a kid loose and raise a child with any sort of instruction or discipline, that is the kind of thing you're going to get. Can you leave your house unlocked? Can you leave your valuables in your vehicle? Can you even leave a bronze vase on your grave? And the answer to all three is no. Somebody's going to take it. Is it theirs? No. Is it wrong? Sure. They're going to do it? Yeah.
Well, you know, people, kids, teenagers, particularly young people, they do things wrong from time to time, and the adults say, well, you know, boys will be boys. And that's their way of saying, we know what's wrong, and we're going to do something about it. But, you know, there's a certain amount of understanding that goes with the way kids sometimes get themselves into trouble. But this is low, Pastor. This is despicably low.
Well, it is rude. And there's a lot of rude behavior out there. And part of the problem, though, of course, is that you can usually get by with it pretty good. I think a lot of us, you know, and maybe some of our listeners can identify, when I was a kid in a store, I shoplifted something, and wouldn't you know it, I got caught. Now, I should have figured I'd get caught, because I'm not really good at trying to look innocent when I'm guilty. And I'm also not very adept of hand, or you know, I never would have made a magician, not even a magician's assistant. So I got caught, and it was really embarrassing, and the owner of the store was very gracious, didn't call the folks, but promised that I'd never be in the store again. Actually, I was just a young person at the time, but never made the mistake twice. That was one of those embarrassing, you talk about self-image being a stake, embarrassing and humiliating and scary experiences.
I'm surprised you're willing to talk about it now.
You know, it's the kind of thing which I offer as an example of the fact that human nature needs that sort of thing to learn what to avoid. And, you know, it taught me to avoid that sort of thing. It also taught me if I was going to steal, I was going to have to steal big enough that I could, A, buy my own conscience off, which is going to take a lot, and B, buy God's judgment off. And since that wasn't ever going to happen, you might as well be honest. And, you know, it's turned out pretty well. That aspect has turned out very well over the years.
Well, if you had a child, we're kind of coming full circle here to the parenting question. If you had a child who did this, I don't know what it is that you quote-unquote shoplifted when you were a young person, but...
Well, that was another example of a failure of concept. I shoplifted an ice cream bar.
Yeah.
And stuck it in my pocket.
Oh, well, now...
You see, now, wasn't that bright?
That's
another testimony.
There was a flaw in your strategy there, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of like being a moron there, and but, I'm good at that part.
You know, whether a kid lifts a pack of gum or something like that, it's stealing, and it needs to be dealt with, and it sounds like the shopkeeper where you committed your error was convinced for some reason that you had learned your lesson and then decided to be merciful in your case.
Yes, I appreciated that.
And as it turned out, he was right. You never made that mistake again. Had that shopkeeper called your parents, I'm sure that they would have been displeased and would have done what was appropriate. But if you get a call from a scrap metal dealer that says, you know what, your kid just brought in 30 urns that we know are stolen from a cemetery, and that's worse, isn't it, than shoplifting an ice cream bar or a pack of gum?
Yeah, that's at that point you have to then process the crime. And in the case of someone who'd done that, it would seem to be probation and community service. Both would be good resolutions to the issue.
It comes a point where maybe grounding falls short.
Yeah, at that point, grounding would be too light. The problem is big enough that it has to be dealt with on a criminal level, really.
You're going to turn them in?
It would be necessary, I think,
really?
For both the child and for my sake, too. You know, and it's not the kind of thing that would be easy to do, nor do I suppose that it would. But it's the kind of thing which, in order to teach the child what's right, and you do the painful thing. I was standing nearby, overheard a conversation. A man, a woman, and their teenage son were explaining a trip through New Mexico some years back to another friend of mine. And the man, who sells tires for a living, knows tires very well, was caught speeding in New Mexico in their vehicle, and he got out of the ticket by explaining to the officer that he didn't realize how much of a change in speed the different size tires, different than the manufacturer originally had intended, would affect his.
Oh, that's a good one. I'll have to remember that one.
And he was boasting about how he got out of the ticket with the New Mexico Patrol. And at the same time, I thought, what a terrible exchange. You've taught your son that lying is good, and that you can cheat your way out of situations. You've also forfeited any respect he might have had for you as his dad. all for the sake of a crummy ticket. I would say take the ticket, do the right thing, buy some respect from your kid, and show them what right looks like, especially when it's painful.
Not as much of that going on these days as we need, I don't think.
No, and I had messed up recently, and yesterday I didn't realize I had made a mistake. I had gotten the wrong thing ordered in, and so I had to own that yesterday. Say, it's my mistake. I messed up. I'll make it right. Let's just go forward from here. And, you know, it's so much less stress if that happens. And that's true, too, with the kids. You know, if I, as a parent, make a mistake, it's necessary for me to be able to apologize to the kid and say, you know what, I was wrong, you were right, and I apologize, and show the child what it means to own your own mistakes. I think it's important, too.
As a parent... The parents listening to me know this is true. As a parent, it's hard to admit to your child that you were wrong, that
yes.
you made a mistake. Is it even harder to admit to people you made a mistake when you're a pastor?
You have to get over it, really. You have to get over the idea that somehow you don't make mistakes. And thus, you know, the first time that you mess up and do it, it's hard. And the second time, you know, it's not pleasant, but you've done it before, and you realize this is the right way to go. And I think there's a benefit in knowing the right way to go by experience, because even though you may have a certain reluctance to say, gee, this is gonna, I'm really going to look embarrassed here, feel embarrassed, look silly, or look incompetent, it's still the right thing to do. And let the Lord sort things out. It's a trust in the Lord, ultimately.
Well, we have we've come all the way around here from discipline, spanking, all the way around to grave robbing. I'm not quite sure how we wound our way through those places, but that's where we've been, and I appreciate your expertise.
Well, it's, you know, I offer my observations for what it's worth as one who's raised four kids. We currently have our eldest grandson living with us, and he's a great blessing for us, age 14, entering high school, and to have the opportunity to put into practice some of those lessons I've learned through raising my own kids now with our grandson, I think that's really neat. I hope it's a blessing for him as well, and we trust that God will be with those who are listening in and guide and guard and keep them as well in our Savior Jesus Christ. And thank you too, Brother Chuck, for your time.
All righty. Pastor Lane Bergman from Faith Lutheran Church in Churubusco, Indiana, is our guest, or has been our guest here today on our Ask the Pastor program. We will continue in the book of Hebrews as we finish up Hebrews chapter 12 next time on our 10:05 Bible study. Thanks for the questions. Thanks for the calls. Join us tomorrow.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guests Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.